PGA Championship, breaking down the Indianapolis Colts 2021 schedule, and NBA playoff predictions. LaValley Sports Talk begins right now. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the LaValley Sports Talk podcast, brought to you by the Sideline Network. As always, I'm your host, Chris LaValley. Hope you're all doing well and staying safe. So let's kick off the pod. We're going to talk a little golf. I'm going to do it a little differently this time. So I decided to take a look at the betting odds for the PGA Championship, and I figured this would be kind of fun just to take a look and see who the favorites are, where their world rankings are, and just to kind of get a feel for what the bettors are thinking. So in your top six, as far as bets go, you've got, in order, McIlroy, Thomas, Rahm, Spieth, DeChambeau, and Dustin Johnson. Now, all but one of those six favorites are top 10 in the world golf rankings. McIlroy is the favorite right now at 11-1 odds. He's a two-time PGA champ, both in 2012 and 2013. Then you have Justin Thomas, who is the second-ranked player in the world, 14-1 odds. He was the 2017 winner. Followed by Jon Rahm, who is also 14-1 odds. And then you have Jordan Spieth at 16-1. He's the 26th ranked player in the world. Again, he's the only one that's not in the top 10. Bryson DeChambeau is the 5th ranked player in the world. He's got 16-1 odds. And Dustin Johnson is still the number one rated player in the world at 18-1. Then you get a little bit further down here, and you've got Xander Schauffele at 22-1. Schauffele is the 4th ranked player in the world. He's also my pick to win the championship. I think this Schauffele is going to break out. He's been right at the cusp these past few majors, and I think this is going to be his time to shine. This will be, if he does end up winning the PGA Championship, this would be his first career major. And then you've got Victor Hovland, who's the 11th ranked player in the world at 25-1. Colin Morikawa, who's the defending champ who won it last year. He's the 6th ranked player in the world. He's at 30-1 odds, followed by Brooks Koepka, who's a 13th ranked player in the world, 33-1 odds. He's also a two-time winner. He won it back-to-back years in 2018 and 2019. And then you have Hideki Matsuyama, who is the 15th ranked player in the world. He's at 33-1 odds. And then you have four players at 35-1 in order: Patrick Cantlay, Webb Simpson, Patrick Reed, and Tony Finau. Then a little bit further down the list, you have Justin Rose at 66-1 odds, and then Phil Mickelson at 200-1 odds. I think taking Phil Mickelson that's a pretty damn good bet. You get 200-1 odds on Mickelson. And also Justin Rose at 66-1. I think those are two people that I would keep an eye on if you're looking to bet. I mean, we can't do it in the state of Connecticut, but there are plenty of other states that have opened up sports gambling. I'm just saying, if I had to put some money down, I would definitely consider putting both Justin Rose and Phil Mickelson as dark horses in this tournament, as well as Tony Finau. And Tony Finau has always been the bridesmaid, never the bride, when it's come to majors and even a lot of PGA tournaments in general. But he's a damn good golfer. And I think 35-1 odds for Finau is not a bad place to be either. So again, overall, I just think I thought this would be an interesting way of taking a look at the PGA Championship. It's going to be a great tournament. Like I said, I'm taking Xander Schauffele. I like Schauffele a lot. Morikawa has been very quiet this season since winning the championship last year. But I wouldn't sleep on him. And here's the thing, though. I don't buy into Rory. I understand Rory is, he won his first tournament a couple weeks ago. It was his first tournament in 18 months that he had won. But again, he won it by the skin of his teeth. I don't see why he should be considered the favorite. I would even take Rahm and Thomas over him. I think DeChambeau is way too high up. Bryson has not played well this season at all. He's played pretty terrible. He played awful in the Masters. I don't see why DeChambeau should be considered a favorite whatsoever. A lot of people are on the DeChambeau bandwagon. While I think he's entertaining to watch, I don't particularly like the way he's been playing. His short game has been pretty awful, and his drives have been very inconsistent. You know, it's great that you can slap the ball 400 yards, but when it's spraying all over the course, it's a little difficult to take you very seriously. So again, I think if you're gonna put down some bets, I would definitely consider Finau 35-1, Rose at 66-1, and Mickelson at 200-1. And again, I'm taking Xander Schauffele at 22-1 to win this championship. Before we talk NFL, I would be remiss if I did not bring up the fact that the new scoring champion in the NBA is Steph Curry. I've talked Steph Curry a lot on this podcast the past few weeks, and I'm going to do it again because I think it's well-deserved. Yes, I'm biased. Curry is my favorite NBA player, but what he has done this season for this team with little to no help has been absolutely tremendous. He would be, if the Warriors were a higher seed, if they were like a top three, top four seed, he should be the MVP of the season. I know what Jokic has done. I know Jokic has had a phenomenal year, but my money would be on Steph Curry. I think he's going to get top three in MVP voting anyway. But I think that if you really dig into his numbers, he would be, or he should have been, the favorite for MVP had the Warriors been a better overall team. So 33-year-old Steph Curry is the second oldest scoring champion in NBA history. And so there's a list here of some of the best games that he's had this season. He had a 62-point game with 8 three-pointers, 57-point game with 11 three-pointers, 53-point game with 10 three-pointers, a 49-point game with 11 threes, 49 points with 10 threes, 47 points with 11 threes, 42 points with 11 threes, 40 points with 10 threes, and 38 points with 11 assists. And this is from a tweet from NBA History. It says, with this 2020-2021 scoring title, Steph Curry now joins Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Michael Jordan, and Wilt Chamberlain as the only players in NBA history with multiple championships, MVPs, and scoring titles. That's pretty damn phenomenal. You can say what you want. Steph Curry gets a lot of hate. I still have never been able to figure out why people don't respect Steph Curry. He's going to go down as the greatest shooter of all time, and he's on pace to arguably be in the conversation of like a top 10 player of all time if he keeps going down this road here. If he wins another championship, if he becomes a four-time NBA champion, I don't see how you can't have him in the top 10 all time. But anyway, we'll talk some more NBA later on in the podcast as I break down my NBA playoff predictions. Last week, the 2021 NFL schedule was released. Thought it would be fun this week to break down the Colts schedule. I'm going to give you my predictions week by week, and let's get it going. So, the first two games of the regular season, the Colts go back-to-back against NFC West opponents. They start off with the Seahawks at home, followed by the Rams at home. I'm going to say that they beat the Seahawks, they lose to the Rams. So they start off going 1-1 against the NFC West. I think that the Seahawks are going to have a rough season this year. Russell Wilson really did a lot, in my opinion, to destroy team chemistry. So I don't like the Seahawks at all, actually, this season. I don't think they're going to be all that great. The Rams, I think, are going to be a top two seed in the NFC by the end of the season. So I'm going to just say that I think the Rams are a better team than the Colts. So, you know, as being as objective as I possibly can, I'll say that the Colts start off the season 1-1. Then they go at the Titans the following week. That's going to be a W. I don't like the Titans at all this season. I think that they made a lot of mistakes allowing offensive weapons to just walk off that team. I think Ryan Tannehill is going to be in for a rude awakening. Following week, they play at the Dolphins. I'm also going to say that that's going to be a win. I don't buy into Tua. I like the way that the Dolphins drafted. I think the Dolphins have the potential to be a playoff team. But as it is with Miami, I'm at the point with the Dolphins where I have to see it to believe it, because the Dolphins have supposedly had great drafts over the past few seasons, and yet they've never been able to actually put it all together and make it to the playoffs. So until I see them be successful, I'm going to say that that's going to be a win for the Colts. So that starts the season off at 3-1. The following week, they play at the Ravens on Monday Night Football. I'm going to say that that's a loss for the Colts. They're playing in Baltimore on prime time, Monday Night Football. I'm just going to assume Lamar Jackson's going to ball out in a primetime game. I'll just be like, again, it's just about being objective here. I say that that's a loss. Following week is at home against the Texans. They're going to blow them out. The Texans will be lucky to win two games this season. Following week is at the 49ers on Sunday Night Football. I'm going to say that's a win. And I'm going to say that's a win because I'm not too sure who's going to be playing quarterback at that point in time. And while I like the 49ers, and I think that they have a really good roster and they have the potential to be a playoff team, I'm not too sure who their quarterback's going to be. I just don't know. It may be Jimmy G. It may not be Jimmy G. I don't know what just how the chemistry is going to work on that team in that locker room, if there's going to be calls for Jimmy G to get benched at that point in time. So I'm just going to take the Colts. I feel better about it. So we're going to go with the Colts with the win. Following week, three straight weeks, I think they're going to win. They're going to go on a winning streak. They play Titans at home, Jets at home, Jaguars at home. And I think they go win, win, win. The following week, they go to Buffalo. That's going to be a loss. Then they play the Bucks at home. That's going to be a loss. So they follow up a nice five-game winning streak with a two-game losing streak. And then they follow up with a game at the Texans. That'll be a win. Then they hit their bye week at week 14. The following week, they play at home against the Patriots. I think that's a W. The Patriots, I don't know. They may be a middling 500 team this season. Look, they could be good. It's Bill Belichick. But I don't buy it, either one of their quarterbacks. Maybe they figured something out. Perhaps Cam Newton needed another season. Maybe he'll be good this year. I don't buy Mac Jones either. So I just think overall the Colts are going to be a better team. Following week, they play at Cardinals. I think that's a win as well for my Colts. And then they play the Raiders at home. That's a win. The Raiders are going to be a dumpster fire this year. And then they finish off the season at the Jaguars. I'm actually going to say that's a loss, because at that point in time, I think the Colts will be resting players, getting ready for the playoffs, and very likely they'll just have their second string in for most of the game. So I think that'll be a loss. So with that said, that's going to put the Colts overall record at 12-5, which I think will be easy enough for them to be the AFC division winner and probably like the three seed as far as the playoffs go. I think both the Ravens and the Chiefs are going to have better overall records than the Colts do. So those who want to push back at me, be my guest, @LaValleyCH on Twitter. Tell me where I'm wrong. But realistically speaking, the Colts should go 6-0 in their division. They should have 6 wins automatically in their division. Now, I know I said that the Jaguars would be a loss the last week of the season, but if the Colts need to win that game, they should be able to win that game. If they, for whatever reason, for playoff seeding, if they need to win that game, they should win that game. So let's put the AFC South aside. So that's 6 wins right there that they should have. I know everyone's like, oh, you know, you're never going to go undefeated in your division. Well, I think that the Colts can. I think realistically speaking, they're better. The Texans are a walkover team for any team they play this year. If the Texans win more than 2 games, that's a huge success for the Houston Texans. The Jaguars are going to be good, but not this year. The Jaguars have all the makings of being an excellent football team. I just don't see it this first season. I think it's going to take a year or two for Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence. They're going to have to get their sea legs under them. First year is going to be rough. I said it last week or 2 weeks ago. If the Jaguars can win 6 games, if they can win 7 games, that's a win for them. But I think it's more like 6. And then the Titans. I think the Titans lost too many players on offense. They're not going to be the same team. They're going to be too reliant on Henry to carry them. Ryan Tannehill does not have the weapons that he's had in the past. I don't buy the Titans into this season. Now, I said that last season, and the Titans were phenomenal again, 2 years in a row. But again, call me skeptical. I don't buy into the Titans. So I think that's 6 wins for the Colts right there. And then if you look at the schedule, I think that the Dolphins are an easy win for them. So that's 7 wins. The Jets are 8. And then the Raiders are 9. So for me, those teams are not as talented overall roster-wise as the Colts are. So that's 9 wins right there, okay? You can push back on me with my feelings on, and I'll listen to arguments about my Seahawks prediction that the Colts will win, my 49ers prediction that the Colts will win, because I think that you could argue, and I would listen to arguments about the 49ers having a better roster than the Colts. I don't think you can make that argument about the Seahawks, though. But I could hear arguments about the 49ers. The Rams, I think, I'm penciling that in as an L. I don't think the Colts are a better overall team than the Rams. So I have no problem with that. The same thing with the Buccaneers. I think that Brady and the Bucs are going to be the number one overall seed in the NFC. I think they should be the favorites to go back to the Super Bowl because everybody's returning. And they drafted really well. So to me, those two teams, the Rams and the Bucs, I have as solid losses. But the rest of these teams could go win or loss. I mean, again, I have them losing to the Ravens. but maybe they pull it out in Monday Night Football against the Ravens. And maybe they don't against the 49ers. It could happen. But if the Colts do their job and they beat the teams and the rosters that they are better than, there's no reason why the Colts can't go 12-5, 11-6, and still win the AFC South. Because, again, I don't think they're going to be competing with the Titans, who I think would be the second-place team in that division this season. I think that, again, they can almost cakewalk their way to an AFC South division title. Now, what they do in the playoffs, we'll see. I'll cross that bridge once we actually get there near the end of the season. But as far as I'm concerned, while I think that the first 2 weeks are a gauntlet for that team to have to go back-to-back against the NFC West, outside of that, though, I think they have a pretty good schedule in their favor, and I like the fact that the bye week is in week 14. I've always been somebody who's preferred that my team have a bye week further into the season than earlier into the season, because obviously you need the rest to gear up for the postseason if your team is postseason bound, which I do believe that the Colts will be. So again, I've got the Colts going 12-5 overall. If you want to push back, by all means, reach out at LaValleyCH on Twitter. I'd love to hear from you. So this past weekend, the NBA inducted three new players into their Hall of Fame: the late, great Kobe Bryant, Kevin Garnett, and Tim Duncan. ESPN had wall-to-wall coverage, per usual. When anything that comes to the NBA, ESPN is up their ass. But anyway, ESPN had wall-to-wall coverage of the NBA. Rachel Nichols, who is the host of The Jump, she is a prominent NBA talking head for the network, sat down with Tim Duncan. Now, you would think in an interview for Tim Duncan on his day, where he is being inducted into the Hall of Fame, that the questioning would be fluff questions. Just, hey, how are you feeling? Let's talk about some of your greatest matchups. Let's talk about some of your greatest games. Let's talk about memories that you have about your NBA career. You know, just very easygoing questions. Well, Rachel Nichols felt the need that while talking to Tim Duncan, I got to insert LeBron James in here somehow. Now, before I continue, I'm going to preface this by saying this. I am not bashing LeBron in this argument or in this rant. This has nothing to do with LeBron. This has to do with the media and the media's obsession with him. Specifically, Rachel Nichols' obsession with him, because my God, does she love herself some LeBron James. Okay, so getting back to it. She goes on this long diatribe about how great LeBron is and talking about how he carried his Cavs team to the finals, where Tim Duncan and the Spurs swept them 4-0, but like, what was it like playing against him? What was it like talking to him after the game? What was it that you said to him? Didn't you say to him that, you know, he was going to be, the league was going to be his one day? You know, so tell us about that. Tell us about that conversation. And you could see, like, just, and Tim Duncan, who is stoic beyond measure, who has always been somebody who's just been politically correct, doesn't really say much to the media. You never really got anything from him. He did all of his talking on the court, which is why so many people like myself revered him, loved him, thought he was awesome, because he didn't try to stir any type of controversy, stayed out of the media spotlight, just wanted to play basketball. That was his gig. You could physically see on his face that he was annoyed by this questioning, this line of questioning, where all of a sudden it went from, you know, you could talk about, I don't know, you could talk about the fact that I'm a 5-time NBA champion or a 3-time finals MVP or a 2-time MVP, 15-time NBA All-Star. You know, we could talk about those type of things. But instead, because of your obsession with LeBron James, we got to talk about LeBron on my day. But the best part about this is that she got absolutely slaughtered on Twitter. Absolutely destroyed. Nobody was having it. Nobody wanted to hear about LeBron on Tim Duncan's day. You had tweets like, quote, Tim Duncan just got inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame after having one of the best careers we've ever seen, and Rachel Nichols is asking this, and I can't repeat the other word, about LeBron on his day. Whole NBA media needs an overhaul. Another tweet, quote, Rachel Nichols interviews Timmy as he gets inducted into the Hall of Fame and starts asking him about how great LeBron James is. I'll leave it at this, end quote. And there are countless others as well. The point is, though, I think, and this is a good thing, I think a lot of people are starting to wake up. a lot of, especially like NBA Twitter and just sports fans in general on social media, are not buying into the LeBron James is the greatest thing of all time anymore. And we all must bow down to him. And again, this is not a LeBron James bashing segment. This is a sports media bashing segment. And I mean this truly. I'm not bashing LeBron here. The point is, they've carried his drool cup for so damn long that people are finally starting to sit back and go, wait a minute. Hold on a second. This is Tim Duncan's day. This is his day. The dude's one of the top five. I shouldn't say top five. I'm sorry. He's one of, if not the greatest power forward of all time, arguably a top 10 player all time. And you're going to sit here on his day and talk LeBron? Are you going to do the same thing to LeBron when it's his day? When he's getting inducted in the Hall of Fame? You're going to bring up, hey, so what was it like playing against Kevin Durant? What did you and Kevin Durant talk about? Oh, man, wasn't it fascinating playing against arguably the greatest scorer of all time in KD? Or what was it like playing against Steph, the greatest three-point shooter of all time? What did you guys talk about? Oh, man, wasn't he so tremendous on the court? That's not going to happen. We all know that's not going to happen. They're going to be bowing down to him, fanning him with just so much adoration when it's LeBron's day. But on Tim's day, on his day to get inducted, you somehow have to make it about LeBron. It's just nauseating. It's absolutely nauseating. And ESPN isn't alone. There's people at other networks like Nick Wright, whose only career claim to fame is the fact that he is on LeBron's dick 24/7. That dude, when LeBron James retires from the NBA, Nick Wright's out of a job. He's going to be out of a job because that dude, A, he knows nothing about basketball to begin with. How this man has a platform is beyond me. I blame Colin Cowherd for that 100% because he is the reason why Nick Wright has the job that he has at FS1. It's publicly noted that Colin Cowherd got him that job. Nick Wright knows nothing about basketball, and he's so... He's created his shtick. He's the anti-Skip Bayless in the sense that Skip Bayless's shtick is that he's just going to constantly say LeBron can't do X, Y, or Z, and he's not good enough, and he's never going to be Jordan. That's Skip's shtick. Nick Wright's shtick is LeBron is the greatest human being to ever walk the planet. And again, it's obnoxious. And Nick Wright's another guy who gets roasted on Twitter all the time because nobody wants to hear it. So look, at the end of the day, y'all can have your opinions about LeBron. Y'all can have your opinions about the NBA sports media or just sports media in general. But this type of stuff, the stuff that Rachel Nichols did, is why so many people have turned off ESPN. Because it is a propaganda network that is just all in for one guy. You can't say anything negative about just one player. Everybody else, you're allowed to criticize. You can criticize every other superstar, but you're never allowed to say one negative thing about LeBron. And if you do say something negative about LeBron, which Stephen A. Smith has done in the past, Stephen A. is the only commentator who has the carte blanche to be able to go on national television, look into the camera, A, because he's the face of ESPN, but B, he's got the cachet to be able to just look in the camera and say, hey, LeBron messed up here, here, and here. However, he's got to go on a five-minute diatribe about how great LeBron is prior to criticizing him. There is not one single person at ESPN that will ever just sit down in front of the camera and look and say, hey, LeBron's got to knock this shit off, or LeBron did not perform well in this game. He's got to be better. You're never going to see it because it's not allowed. There's no such thing as objective journalism at ESPN when it comes to covering LeBron James. And it's why their ratings are sinking faster than the Titanic. All right, so we're going to close out the pod. I'm going to give you my NBA playoff predictions here. We've got two more play-in games. I'm recording this on Thursday, so it's either going to be Memphis, Golden State as your eighth seed in the Western Conference, and then you've got the Pacers and Wizards as the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference. To me, it really doesn't matter which team gets in the eighth seed. Neither one of them is going to beat the one seed, in my opinion, so that game's kind of a wash. So this is what we're looking at here. So we're going to have Utah facing either Golden State or Memphis. My money's on Golden State, so I think it's going to be Utah, Golden State. And then you have the Clippers playing Dallas, Denver, Portland, Phoenix, Lakers. So that's your first round of the Western Conference. And then on the East, you've got Philly. I think they're going to end up playing Washington. So you're going to have Philly Wizards, Knicks, Hawks, Bucks, Heat, and Nets and Celtics. So in the first round, let's do Eastern Conference first. So in the first round, I'm going to take the 76ers to win. I'm going to take the Knicks to win. I'm going to take the Bucks, and I'm going to take the Nets. So then we're going to have... So then you'll have 76ers against the Knicks, and then the Bucks versus the Nets. So I'm going to take the 76ers to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think, look, if the Nets can stay healthy, I think the Nets are in. If they can't stay healthy, the Bucks are going to be in. So it's a tough decision here because you really don't know what you're going to get from Brooklyn. I'm going to take Brooklyn, though. I'm just going to assume that they're going to be healthy. I think Brooklyn's the better team. So I'm going to take Brooklyn over Milwaukee. And then you have Nets, 76ers. Again, I'm doing this under the assumption that the Nets are going to stay healthy the whole way through. I'm taking the Nets to make it to the finals. All right, so then when we look in the Western Conference, in the first round, I'm going to take the Jazz over the Warriors, the Clippers over the Mavericks, the Trailblazers over the Nuggets, and the Lakers over the Suns. Sucks for the Suns. They got absolutely hosed with this matchup. I know they were praying for the Warriors. That just unfortunately didn't happen for them. They also had opportunities to be the number one seed, and they threw games away down the stretch. Story for another day. So then next round, I'm going to take the Clippers over the Jazz, and the Lakers are going to beat the Trailblazers. And then we'll have the Western Conference matchup that everybody wants, which will be Lakers and Clippers. And I think the Lakers are going to beat the Clippers in seven in that matchup. So then we'll have Kevin Durant against LeBron James again in the finals. I'm going to take the Nets over the Lakers in six. And James Harden will be your finals MVP. Now, I am 100% certain, if I was going to put money on it, I'm taking the Lakers to make it to the finals. On the Eastern side, it could be either the 76ers or the Nets. It's really just up to whether or not the Nets can stay fully healthy. If everyone can play on the Nets, then I think the Nets are the best team in basketball. If either James Harden or Kevin Durant can't go, the Nets are screwed. The Nets can win without Kyrie Irving. I fully believe that they can win without Kyrie Irving. They can't win without either James Harden and or Kevin Durant. If neither one of them is fully healthy, the Nets are screwed. So we'll see what happens. I'm not trying to hedge my bets. I'm just saying I'm not 100% positive who's going to come out of the East, but my money, fully healthy, all things considered, is the Nets. And again, I think the Nets will beat the Lakers in the finals. If it ends up being Lakers-Philly, I would take the Lakers at that point in time. But anyway, I'm taking the Nets. James Harden's going to be your NBA Finals MVP. And as always, you can let me know what you think of my playoff picks at LaValleyCH on Twitter. I'd love to hear from you. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the LaValley Sports Talk Podcast, brought to you by the Silent Network. As always, thank you so much for tuning and listening. I really appreciate it. Please be sure to check me out on iTunes, subscribe, rate, and review. And while you're there, we've got plenty of other podcasts for you from the Silent Network, including Drinks with Dan, Richo's Rant, Richo and Lala, and Spaceball. That is it. That's all I have for you this week. Be well. Stay safe. Talk to you all again next week.